am Shisada Akona Kamada, and welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine. Good evening. Welcome to Satsang. This is Shisada Akona Kamada. I'm joined by Pia Yin. This evening, we're going to start things off with our protection, and then we're going to move directly into some sound healing work that I want to do specifically for Fukushima. As most of you out there know, we still have a major issue with Fukushima. And there's a gentleman out there named Tom Kenyon who does really, really brilliant sound healing work. So I have a piece of his that was made specifically for transmutation work for Fukushima. And it's quite powerful. I thought it would be a beautiful way for us to begin the night in service. So we're going to kind of get right into it. And like I said, I'm just going to say so be it at the end of our clearing, and then the music will start. So as you get yourself ready for the clearing, just stay in that space and we'll move right into it. All right, take a deep breath and call yourself forward. Mother, Father, God that I am, through the great central sun hierarchy, through the office of the Christ, through the order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, keeper of the violet flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And now I call forth shafts of pure Christ light, one to surround each of us, and I ask that they be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds, to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity. PLEN and I place ourselves in service to all of you tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions, and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. Because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Just hold that space while we wait on the music. Remember, you're connecting into that Christ consciousness grid. Thank you. If you experienced that as incredibly strong, I'm going to ask, let's hold this space for another couple of seconds. I'm going to call in the violet flame again and ask that it be blazed through each one of us, through the collective pain that came up through that meditation, so that none of you end up carrying that pain. I want you to visualize a beautiful violet flame just burning all of your physical form and out a good 20 feet all around you. You're just immersed in it. And let's watch with our inner eye as that violet flame turns to this gorgeous scintillating white light as all of that energy gets transmuted back to its divine essence. And take a deep breath. Very good. Thank you very much for sharing that with me. You know, my life as it stands right now is completely about service, and it's always such a treat for me to share service with other people. And the beauty of doing work like this, as I've said before, but I'm going to be the broken record here and say it again, is that every time we come together as a group to do meditation work like this, the effect of it is just exponentially increased. You can't even fathom the power in it, you know. And so while we're kind of in that little space, I'm going to do a little plug for the Add Your Energy Global Collective. If those of you out there have not heard of it yet, there's a Facebook presence. And it's, what is it? Facebook.com/AYE Gatherings. Yeah. The Add Your Energy Collective was created by just a collective, so there's no one kind of attached to it. And the focus of their work is to specifically do a monthly group meditation on a global scale, where they will bring together people who actually are meditating in physical groups, as well as those who just link in from home or wherever they happen to be, for an extended meditation where, kind of like when we hold space, it's the same thing, but it just on a global scale and the same time each month. And I would highly recommend anybody listening to this to go and like that page and get their newsfeed for upcoming events. They also they've taken on a weekly meditation that's called Hold the Space, that's actually run by our group, Create a New World. And we have been doing that for quite some time now, a couple of years, I think. And every Wednesday night at 9 o'clock, we just hold space, you know, the space of loving equanimity, just like we just did, for 10 minutes, just at 9 o'clock on Wednesdays. And again, it's just very powerful. We aren't coming together physically. It's very difficult to do, but we can all link in energetically, you know, and there really is no difference. So if you can just join us in that, we would so appreciate it. You know, you make a huge difference when you do that, even though you may not feel it. You don't need to feel it. You can trust it. And know that it does make a difference, and you are placing yourself in service, and that is an amazing, amazing gift to the hierarchy. You know, they always say God needs a body, and that's absolutely true when it comes to change on the planet. The masters and the archangels are there in support, and they want to help all the time, but they can't do anything unless they're invited in. And, you know, because there is free will here, so they can't ever intrude on your free will. It would be against universal law. So you need to invite them in. And God needs you to take action in the world, you know. And here's part of the paradox. Part of the paradox is that, you know, in essence, it's perfect as it is. However, at the same time, it takes the will of God to create the change, right? Not the personal will. And that's a very big part of what's happening on the planet. El Moya and Archangel Michael both represent the first ray, which is the blue ray, the will of God. And they're both just highly, highly, highly active on the planet, because that's something that is moving very, very strongly. And it kind of has to do with what we're looking at tonight. I, you know, Shambhala Center is, we're actually a church, which I always laugh about because we're like the church of no dogma, you know, which is hysterical to me, the church of non-belief. And, but as a church, you know, it's important to recognize the things I'm going to talk about. So tonight you're going to get a sermon, people. I hope you're all ready for a sermon. Reverend Shasada is here for tonight's sermon. And I'm really fired up about this one. There has been so much moving. And I've seen it for a good couple weeks. And I just, this is what I do. You know, I see things and I witness and I watch and watch where it's coming up. And then always, you know, in a week or 2 weeks, whatever it is, I'll see it start coming up other places. And that's always my confirmation that I was, you know, I don't go looking for it. It just shows. And today it showed itself to me very, very, very clearly in Kepacha's Paley Report. And so for those of you who are on like the Shambhala Center Facebook page or Create a New World, you'll recognize that because I always post the Paley Report when it comes out because Kepacha's work is so in alignment with the work that we do. You know, some minor differences, but really nothing. And so when he comes forward and says exactly what I've been witnessing, it's like, okay, we really need to address this. And that's what we're going to do tonight. So right now, I have an exercise that I actually want to do with everybody that PLN is going to help me with. But if you don't have a piece of paper, remember I've told you before, bring paper and a pencil to our program. If you don't have one, please get one now, because I'm going to ask you to do a little work right now with us. She's going to do it verbally. And she's laughing because she's sick. But she's going to do it verbally. And then you guys are going to do it on your own there. We'll see how it all unfolds. Who knows? So here's an exercise that I always do with my students. Now, the reason I do it with my students is a little different, okay? And I'll explain that to you after we move through the process. But I always do this with a student at some point in their work, usually pretty early on. So we're going to do it as a group tonight. I'm going to ask you to make a column on your paper. Let's split your paper into, say, two columns. And on one side, I'm going to have you write my values, okay? And on the other side, write society's values. All right. Now we have to get honest and we have to really start looking. So I want you to ask yourself, what are the things that I truly value, right? I'll give you a little bit of lead time so you can write a few things down before I call on PLN. No cheating. Do you feel like you're in church? Do you? This is a great exercise. I would recommend you do this with people you just know because it's a great exercise. All right. So we don't have a lot of dead air time here. PLN, I'm going to ask you to give me one of your values.
I have discovering the self, capital S.
Okay. I hope you can hear her. She's struggling for breath tonight. Okay. So she said discovering the self, capital S, is something that she values. Okay, so let's keep going. Let's look from a very human level in your world. What do you value? Right? Can you give me something else?
Wait. I'm sorry, say that again.
Just from a very human level, mm-hmm. What do you value? As a person, like, what do you value? Where do you place that?
Money.
Okay.
And a very human level.
At a very human level. Okay, so that's good. So little check there next to money, because I'm going to come back to that. Let's go deeper. What do we value?
Human level?
Well, just as the person that you are, what do you value? Yeah.
Life,
beautiful. Life, nice. Okay. How about love? Kind of the no-brainer answer, right?
Yeah, well, I wrote life, but for, like, everyone. But I think it's because at this point in time, this love that I have for everyone, mm-hmm. I value
yes.
life.
Yes.
because it wasn't that way, you know, a while back. Mm-hmm.
If you could have answered that a while back, would you have said love, though, that you value love?
No, not at all.
You're a rare case, though. We have to remember your patterning is just a little bit different. Oh my gosh, people are laughing out there who know her. That's actually quite funny. Most people would say they value love. Okay, so let me run through some of kind of what most people would come up with on their own should they make a list, especially people who are ready to do this level of work. They would probably say they value relationship, they value kindness, they value compassion, they value,
family.
That's family, beautiful family. Yeah. They value fun. They value, I wish all of you could chime in and I could hear you right now, because I'm sure you've got other answers. They value opportunity. They value the things that they love to do.
Work, like career.
Career. They value passion. They value creativity. Respect. Respect for life.
Good one.
Respect for themselves. Respect for others. Right. Okay.
Morals, right?
They value morals, ideals. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, so good. That's a good start to a list. Now, let's switch over to what does society value? What can we come up with on that side?
Money,
yeah. And when I say society tonight, for all intents and purposes, we're looking at Western society. Okay. What else does society value?
I feel like everything just stems from money.
Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're actually going to get to that later. But what does society value? You know, it does value money. It values allegiance, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's think of it. If you are someone in, say, America that stands up and says that they disagree with something, say, our government is doing, there are a lot of people in this country who would call you a terrorist right now. Mm-hmm. You're unpatriotic, you know. Never mind that the Constitution was set up, you know, and the whole point was to constantly question the government, right? Mm-hmm. But if you do it now, a lot of people think you're unpatriotic. So patriotism, I guess, is the word that I'm really looking for, that society values.
What about, like, religion, having some sort of religion?
Mm-hmm. Society values God. And this is an interesting list. You will find that the what does society value list is going to be very polarized, because society will seem to value certain things. We're going to say that, well, we can say society values family, right? So if you look at what you may see, like, you know, public service announcements that say things about valuing family, or it comes up on TV shows or whatever, and so you get it on a societal level. But then if you get deeper and you really look at, well, where's the proof that society actually values family, what are you going to find? You're going to find that it's a lot of lip service, right? Right? I mean, maternity leave for 12 weeks, if a woman's lucky. If she's even lucky, so she doesn't even have time to nurse her child properly, right? Has to go back to work. Do they really value family? Do they give you time off so you can be with your family, so that you can be a cohesive unit, you know? Like, all these things we have to look at. So, yeah, they could say that they value one thing, but I always say, like, your actions speak so much louder than your words. And so here we go. So they value family. Would society say that it values love? Sure it would. Prove it to me.
Wellness.
Beautiful. That's excellent. Does society actually value wellness? It says it does. God, prescriptions are expensive, right? The whole healthcare debate is just a nightmare, right?
Government subsidized crops.
That's right. Yeah, the whole GMO thing, and yeah, government subsidies that are shutting down the small farmer, and Yeah. And, you know, and we would see the government values the individual, right? On a level of, you know, you're here, you're unique, especially in this country. That's where we're supposed to be, the big melting pot. You know, you're unique and you have something to add to this country. And if we really look at it, is that true? You know, how does it really play out? Not so much, unless you're incredibly gifted or incredibly wealthy, right? You know, for the average, like, Filipino out in the street there, I don't think he's feeling like he's very special to the government or to society in general, right? Just picking on anybody. Could be anyone. Okay. So this is a great list. The reason that I ask people to do this, and I would encourage all of you to do this on your own when you really have time to think and sit in it, is because I always have, usually in the beginning of the work with someone, I always have someone say, you know, oh, I feel like I'm just such a failure. And I'll be like, really? Oh, yeah, you know, like, I can't hold down a job, or I don't make enough money. My family's on food stamps. I, you know, I depend on others for assistance, whatever it may be. I'm just a failure, right? And it's not always that. It could be something completely different. But it's just that whole, I'm too fat, you know, I look horrible, and whatever. You pick it. It's fine. And then I'll have them do this list, right? And when you really have time, you're going to pull out. You'll pull out a good, like, 15, 20 things that you really do value. And you'll do the same thing on the other side. And then when I say, show me what you see is going to be what we just kind of looked at. That, well, so here's my list of the things that I know I value. I know I do, because it's in my heart. Like, I feel it. I do value love. Like, I do. Okay, great. And then when you look at society, people will say, well, I can see where society says it values these things. But what I see, based on how society functions, is that that's not really not true. They really value kind of the opposite, you know. Society will tell you that it values, like, altruism, right? The whole sense of giving is a beautiful thing, right? Well, in reality, it's the exact opposite. Society values greed. I mean, look at our society. It's all about how much can I get for myself, because there isn't enough to go around, and I don't want you to have it, because it means if you have it, I won't. So it's all, you know, it's very greedy. You know. And then at that point, when they really see that, I will ask them, why do you continue to judge yourself based on a value system that you don't even believe in? And sit with that for a second. I mean, really look at that. Are you one of those people who judges yourself as a failure because you don't make enough money? Do you judge yourself as less than valuable because you aren't physically attractive? Do you judge yourself as less valuable because of the color of your skin or your gender? Or your sexual preference? And if the answer to those things is yes, then you are judging yourself based on the collectively held opinion of society in general. And if we look at that, what we see is that society in general is the exists in the exact opposite spectrum that your heart does. They couldn't be further apart. They really couldn't be further apart. Now, there are some societies on our planet where the two lists are actually very close together, right? This country is not one of them, not even close. For as many amazing things as this country has going for, and as for as many amazing things as we all have done as Americans, our society here is a mess. An absolute mess. So I want you to allow yourself to sit with that a little bit. Okay? It's time to start being kinder to yourself. You aren't a loser because you can't seem to earn more than $12 an hour. Our society has created a structure that, unless you happen to come into a certain level, you're never going to make, you know, $100,000 a year, $250,000 a year, college or not. And it happens occasionally, but in general, it's not going to happen. You know, in general, someone who's born in the Bronx is not going to grow up and make $2 million a year unless it's through athletics or entertainment. Right. That's the harsh reality of it. And we all have to be very honest about what's really going on out there. All right. So I'm going to talk to you tonight about how we as a collective on this planet have to shift from a society and a belief system structure that is based in scarcity and lack into moving into the unified field, which is based in the exact opposite, that there is abundance and no one should lack for anything. And we're all equal. That is the unified field. When you move into that Christ consciousness grid, that's up in the unified field. You're all just, everyone's just one in that space. There's no separation between you and anything. Now in the illumined worlds, everything functions from that space. And here now, we're functioning in the complete opposite space. I mean, this is hell. It doesn't get worse than this, people. So take that as an encouraging thought. Right? It doesn't get worse. I don't care how happy your dream is right now. This is as bad as it gets down here. Yeah. All right. So we're going to go back to Shambhala Center as a church, because this piece is important. I saw something really amazing recently. So as a church, and it's a church that's not based on any other, Shambhala Center is a very unique thing. It's its own entity. You know, we are representatives of, you know, the Office of the Christ and the Order of Melchizedek. And we are ushering in an organized, and I really am not a fan of using the word religion, right? But we'll use it for tonight. That's fine. An organized religion, the religion of no religion, that will be brand new in this world. And it's not that the concepts are new. The concepts are ancient, absolutely ancient. But the way that it all gets blended together, the way it's presented, is a very new thing on the planet. So we're starting this from scratch. I mean, literally having to write the whole doctrine, you know, like that's my job. I have to set it up, right? So as a church and as the church's founder and the church's, you know, minister, for lack of a better word, I took a vow of poverty. And what I wanted to entitle the show tonight was, you know, it's time for you to take your own personal vow of poverty. And I didn't lead the show with that because I was afraid you'd all go screaming from the rooms. Right. Oh my gosh. But bear with me. It's a little tongue in cheek. Okay. As the minister, I took a vow of poverty. I'm going to show you, this was very interesting to me. It's of course tax season, and I've been looking at tax stuff, right? I do them. We don't hire them out or anything. So I've been knee deep in taxes for a good couple of weeks. And there's something very interesting going on with churches in America. A church is a nonprofit, but not all nonprofits are churches, obviously. And a church is interesting because in America, the minister or priest has the opportunity to receive what they call either a parsonage allowance or a housing allowance, depending on if he owns his home or if it's owned by the church. Which is lovely, right? Because ministers do not make a lot of money, in case, you know, do not let the televangelist thing from the 80s fool you. Like, ministers, by and large, they're not wearing diamond rings and they're not, you know, driving Cadillacs. And the housing allowance allows them to have that lower salary, but still have it stretch further because the church is actually paying for utilities and it's paying for the expense of the house, like a mortgage payment or a rent payment. Okay. Well, that's beautiful. And then the really cool thing is that as far as the IRS is concerned, the money that a minister receives from the parsonage expense is not included as income on their federal tax return. And so we can all go, yay, that's fantastic, right? Good for them. Well, the downside is that even though it's not included as income, the minister is seen as both an employee and self-employed simultaneously. And the minister has to report any housing allowance income as income for self-employment purposes. So it means that if you wanted to take my particular situation, this is how my situation would play out. So this is really interesting to me. I do not collect an income from a Shambhala Center. The only thing Shambhala Center has done financially for me is to provide a housing allowance. Okay. I make no money. Every bit of money that comes in due to the work that I do goes directly into Shambhala Center, and none of it returns to me. Okay. That's the way I wanted it. I've always said every little bit of money I can make will go directly to Shambhala Center for the good of all. Okay. That being said, when I looked at the tax implications this year of that, what I saw was that if there was no vow of poverty and if you didn't get accepted to opt out of Social Security, then what I would be looking at is not collecting an income, so making $0 all year, but owing about $3,500 at the end of the year because of tax on the housing allowance, right? And you're like, wow, like how would you do that? how would that happen, right? So we have to, what the reason that I'm bringing this up is it's like, it's so counterintuitive to me. You have in this country, there's such a devaluation on, men of God, so to speak, right? Those who would come forward in service to others in the name of spirit or the creator, whatever you want to call it. There are people who hear that calling and they hear it very strongly and they come forward and they do their work. And the people that they minister to hold them in a place of great value, don't they? I mean, let's think of it. When someone in their family is seriously sick or dying, who do they call? They call their minister. They call their priest, right? Come sit with us, help us, kind of counsel us. When they're in trouble in their marriage, where do they go initially? Usually, they go to the church before they'll go to a psychologist. So there's great value held there. But how many people, when they go to church and they pass the plate, pull out a buck, right? Oh, it's been a really tight week. $2. I think I'll just skip it this week. Where is your value really being placed? Can we get serious about this for a minute? I mean, really, this is important. We really need to look at this. We really need to look at this. I saw it so clearly this week, and it's really kind of disgusting. For those people who are called to be in service, and they are people who minister to others, who offer them comfort, who offer them solid counsel, right? In the best case scenario, they are more illumined individuals who are functioning from the unified field. Now, granted, take it with a grain of salt because there are an awful lot of ministers out there who are exactly the opposite, okay? And of course, I'm aware of that. I'm looking at the ideal situation here, okay? But when it really comes down to it, what are we willing to give them? Okay. How many ministers out there do you think have saved people from committing suicide? Or have helped save a marriage from a family falling apart? Right? And how do we show them that we value them? Because you'll go to the hairdresser once every month or two and spend $250 and get your highlights done and get a new cut and style and not think twice about it. But would you give $100 a week to the plate when it came around? Or is it not necessary? Right? And this is the kind of warped thinking that has saturated Western society. It's absolutely saturated it. And it's just so backwards. And so today I'm speaking to you from a very grounded place. All right. I'm not way up in the ethers tonight. We're very grounded tonight because people need to start seeing this stuff and being honest about what you're seeing. Okay. What is a vow of poverty? It's a frightening thought, isn't it? Oh my gosh. Like, why would anybody want to be poor? A vow of poverty has nothing to do with being poor. Absolutely nothing. A vow of poverty is stating that what I can create as far as income should go to benefit the whole. Meaning it's not mine to keep. Some may come back to me, but I don't own it. All right. How many of you are willing in this time and space to step up and do that? How many people have it in their head that they have struggled and clawed their way to the point where they could make really good money, and by golly, I'm hanging on to it. And out of the goodness of my heart, I'll donate to the ASPCA and, you know, my church once a month. But the rest of it's all sitting here, and I'm going to protect it and make sure that it can keep growing to protect me, right? Do you see how much fear is in that? It says, oh my gosh, like, there's never enough. There can't be enough for everyone. I got to take care of myself first. And if you look at what true Christianity would bring to you, it would say, you know, you got it all wrong. Because if you stop thinking about yourself long enough and think of others instead, you'll be taken care of. It'll all come back 100-fold. Right? So I want you to, we're going to look for a second at a traditional clan. How does a clan work? In a clan, everyone has a job, right? Based on their kind of skill set. So let's say you're a hunter. There's a hunter in a clan. His job is to go out, kill things, bring the meat back, and it gets shared with the clan. A woman, a young woman, may be in charge of, let's say, you know, gathering roots, berries, things like that. Brings them back, shares them with the group. An older woman who's not as capable of doing harsher labor will take the children of the younger women and help raise them, because that frees the other women up to do what they need to do for the good of the whole. And who else do we have that's a key piece to the clan? We have the shaman, the medicine person. They don't do anything like that. They don't, quote unquote, work in the traditional sense. And actually, they spend most of their time away from everybody else. And what do? They administer to the spiritual well-being of that group of people. They also administer to their physical well-being. But primarily, their purpose is spiritual. Now, does anybody say to them, I'm sorry, you can't have the food that we've worked hard for? Does anyone say, I'm sorry, if you have children, we're not going to help with that because you aren't here doing all the work? No, actually, it's just the opposite. That person is treated, you know, beyond being treated as an equal, they're usually revered. What can we do for you, right? Because they have a connection to spirit that is stronger, and it is witnessed by others that it is stronger than what others are capable of holding. And it is respected. And now, let's take that whole thing. It takes incredible trust and selflessness to live like that, doesn't it? Because what happens as soon as the hunter comes back one day from his hunting and sees that the women only gathered half of the amount of berries and roots for that day, what's going to happen if the hunter, you know, starts yelling at them, oh, you're lazy. You know, you're lazy. You have to work harder. The whole thing collapses, right? Because it gets undermined. And then nothing works. It takes a huge level of trust, knowing that everybody is doing the best that they can do to their capacity, right? Because they want to help everybody. You know, without everybody working, the whole thing's going to fall apart. And I think it's very interesting, because if we look at how the clergy is treated in relationship to how a shaman traditionally is treated. Wow, is that different? Sorry, you're a minister. You know, you could be enlightened, fully enlightened, have the direct line to God, so to speak. And I'm sorry, you really don't deserve to make more than $15,000 a year. You know, you got to drive that old beater of a car until it breaks down again. Then we'll just get it fixed for you, you know? But I've worked really hard, so I deserve to drive a Mercedes, right? Because society has told me that my job is worthy of more money, so I'm going to believe that, and then I'm going to hold myself higher than you because I make more. And it's just like you said, it seems like everything stems from money. And there is absolute truth to that. If you haven't seen that yet, it's time to really, really start looking at it. I used to love this. I had a very illumined anthropology and Western Civ teacher in college named Bob. Loved Bob. And he used to say, you know, thank God for the garbage man, which I always just adored because it was his way of saying, look at what you value. You know, where would you be without your garbage man? In a pile of garbage is where you'd be. Yeah. I mean, that's the reality of it. But how do we value them in our society? Right? It's ridiculous. They work really hard. Do they get paid a lot of money? No. Why? Because they're a garbage man. What difference does it make? I'm sorry. His working a 10-hour day doing manual labor is less valuable than a lawyer sitting in some office, some corporate office, you know, hashing it out between two companies for a merger. Really? It's ridiculous. It's sick is what it is. When we look at the homeless, you know, we look at them and subconsciously you think, you're a loser. You don't have worth. You're not contributing, right? How many homeless people out there could be world famous artists if they were given a chance? How many of them have gifts so far beyond the average person, but they don't have the ability to follow those gifts because of their situation? And we do nothing to lift them up and to help them get in a spot where they can move with that, you know? We all have gifts, right? We all do. So why are we not encouraged as children to do the things that bring us bliss? I mean, think about it. If everybody was encouraged from the time they were little, don't worry about, you know, how much money it costs. Don't worry about all of that stuff. Do what makes you truly happy. Now, I've heard a lot of people say it, but how many people actually apply it? They're two very different things. The focus of life here on this planet revolves around money. Money is a man-made concept, which means it's fallen, right? It's polarized. It can't not be. It was created by fallen man. And I want you to think about this. This is really important. That God did not create the earth and then charge the animals to drink the water, charge the animals to eat the vegetation. God doesn't charge a plant to take in sunshine so that it can go through the process of photosynthesis and grow, right? But yet on this planet, if you're human, you're charged basically to live. If you want to even live here, it costs you money. And if you don't have the money, you're going to live a really wretched life, right? Horrible. Think about who is your provider. If you're thinking right now that you're the one responsible for that great paying job, you got another thing coming. You aren't in control of that. I don't care what it looks like. You are not the one controlling that. Are you in control of your heartbeat? Do you control the breath that goes in and out of your body? Are you the one that decides the moment that the life force is going to be pulled from that body? No. And you're not controlling anything else either. It's time on this planet for us to get right-minded. All right? I'm going to look at this thing that Kate Pacha said today. He has a mantra every week that he brings. So based on everything that I just said, let's look at this. He says, it's time to be honest about you and me, our relationship, its purpose, our destiny. Are we on the same path of self-transformation or lost in fear, lies, and stagnation? I'm going to read it one more time because it's really good. It's time to be honest about you and me, our relationship, collectively too, we're not just talking one-on-one, its purpose, our destiny. Are we on the same path of self-transformation? I'd use the word self-transfiguration, right? Or lost in fear, lies, and stagnation? How many of your life choices are stemming from fear? Honestly. I mean, really, honestly. How many things do you do every day that you do out of fear? How many times do you say something to someone, you placate them to make them feel better because you're afraid that you might anger them? How many times are you wretched and bitchy to someone because you're actually afraid of the opposite, of being tender? When you feel a calling to do something, how many times do you stop yourself from doing it because you're afraid that others are going to know you're doing it? That's a big one. Especially when you get into this level of work. You know, if it was about fear, I wouldn't be sitting here right now, would I? I mean, we're looking at the world knowing, oh my gosh, like she's some crazy lady who thinks she's from Venus. Right? I mean, that's the reality of it. That's what people are going to hear. Can you believe that craziness? It's a gas planet. Right? I know what I know. I know my heart. I know why I'm here. And I will say it to anybody. I don't care. No one has authority over me here. God has authority. That's it. And no man has authority over me. And you all need to move into that space. You need to start being honest about who you are. And you need to be ready to shout it from the rooftops. Whatever it is, you know, I'm comfortable being fat, right? I like the fact that I'm gay. Pick one. I have a guru. For a lot of people, that's a big one. I've had a lot of people who have worked with me, but other people don't know they're working with me. Because they wouldn't want it to get around at work, or they wouldn't want it to get around with their family. You know, if I was nervous about the fact that I was doing what I was doing, can you imagine me bringing that to my family? I mean, you know, I have a family too, like everyone here. All right. It's time to look at the fear level. That really is just, everything here is coming out of fear. Remember, everything. In the illumined worlds, there's no boogeyman, right? It doesn't exist. There's no one out to get you. There's no one out trying to get a foot over you, try to push you down so that they can be lifted. Oh my gosh, it is so not that. You are lifting everyone all the time with no sense of self. It's always, what can I do for you? What can I do for you, right? Now, it doesn't mean you're a pushover because you're not a pushover. Both can be true simultaneously, you know. There is right action. So you stand for yourself when you need to stand for yourself. But you're always there in love and compassion. Always. Always. So that's where we're going to wrap it up for tonight. PLN, do you have anything you want to share about all of that ranting that I did this evening?
Well, with that being said, if everyone, you know, if you could visit the website and donate.
Oh, yeah. Hey, that's right. That's right. Shambhala Center functions purely on donations. So even if it's, you know, go and you know, donate and get some of the archives of the programs, you know, that's a way that we can bring some income in to help us continue to spread our word and be on the radio the way we are. It enables us, you know, that this is a free way that people can get to the teachings. But if you do want to go back and hear older work, which is always just as valid, it doesn't get old, you know. That is a beautiful way to be of service to us. You know, we're here in service to you. So if you do feel appreciation from your heart for the work that we are doing here, we would absolutely gratefully and very willingly accept your donations. And that would be at the ShambhalaCenter.org. I think you go to the shopping cart to make a donation. Yeah, I think.
Yes.
Okay. And then please, you know, join us again on Facebook at the Shambhala Center. I will say, too, if you have an inkling when I've talked to you before about the story of the 144,000 who came from Venus to be of service here, if that does resonate with you, please check out the Facebook site, facebook.com, the 144K. It is brought, it was brought together strictly for those who are here in that capacity as a way to just kind of allow people to come together and connect. Yeah. What else? Is that it for tonight? I think that's it. Okay, so there was a lot of, you know, there's a lot of really deep, yucky, icky stuff that's moving right now. Very, very deep. A lot of it is hinging around money. So you're going to find a lot moving, and you may find a lot of frustration. It's okay. And just, we're going to go into our last meditation for the night. And I'm going to ask that you, we're going to just ask that the Violet Flame come in and transmute anything that came up for people tonight. Because I really was touching on some things that probably triggered everybody on some level. That's beautiful. So as a collective, let's work to transmute all of that discordant energy and bring it back to its natural divine essence. Okay. I love you all so very much. Thank you again for joining us. And we will see you next week.